TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Climate change. The melting of high mountain glaciers. Among these melting glaciers are 98% of the named Alaskan and European glaciers. The Institute of Tibetan Plateau Research studies 612 glaciers. 95% of them are retreating.
These glaciers are dying. They're remnants of another climate on our planet.
When I first met Dr. Lonnie Thompson in December 2007, he reported on his expedition to Mount Kilimanjaro, where they had drilled ice cores 7 years earlier to ascertain the age and thickness of the glacier. In November 2009, he gave an urgent update in the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, writing that the dramatic loss of Kilimanjaro's ice cover has attracted global attention. The three remaining ice fields are both shrinking laterally and rapidly thinning by 26% within the last decade alone. The Kilimanjaro glaciers are 11,700 years old. Thompson says they will have disappeared by 2033 if the current rate of melting continues. In December 2009, NASA climatologist James Hansen called attention again to the glaciers on the Tibetan Plateau. They are sometimes called the Earth's third pole because they hold the largest ice mass outside the polar regions and act as water storage for South and East Asia, providing fresh water to more than a billion people. Hansen and the co-authors of the December 2009 paper on black soot in the troposphere and on the surface of the Tibetan glaciers say that these glaciers have been melting at an accelerating, alarming rate over the past decade, raising the threat that many of them could be gone by mid-century.
If you go over to Tibet, many of the major rivers have their source up on the Tibetan Plateau and in the Himalayas. The Himalayan glaciers store about 12,000 cubic kilometers of fresh water in about 15,000 glaciers and are the lifeline for millions of people.
Professor Lonnie Thompson is a paleoclimatologist. He has achieved global recognition for his drilling and analysis of ice cores from mountain glaciers. I recorded him in 2007 and updated the program in 2009. The accelerated melting of the years since 2009 and the ever louder voices of climate change deniers challenged me to do another update. It's now early 2017. I also want to do a shout out to Professor Lonnie Thompson. He since had a heart transplant and against all medical advice has continued his field work on glaciers, often at elevations where healthy and much younger people succumb to altitude sickness. All this and more will be covered in the upcoming TUC radio programs on the melting of the inland ice. I'm beginning with a rebroadcast of his December 2007 keynote speech for the American Geophysical Union. To accommodate the huge audience, the talk was held in the ballroom of a San Francisco hotel. I got there early to set up at the long press table and connect with the audio engineer. Both of us were amazed that not a single media organization made a recording that night. Here's my 2007 introduction. Dr. Lonnie Thompson saw one of the first ice cores that was recovered from a glacier when he was in graduate school. He was fascinated by the amount of data on Earth history, past climate, and world-changing events that can be read from these ice cores, and made the exploration of ice his life's work. He teaches in the Department of Geological Sciences and is senior research scientist at the Byrd Polar Center at Ohio State University. He came to San Francisco in early December 2007 to issue a warning that the glaciers he knows and loves are melting. Here is Dr. Lonnie Thompson.
I want to talk about abrupt climate change and our future, and I'm going to start with kind of a background. But if you look at the definitions of abrupt climate change, there's a physical definition, a translation of the climate system from one regime to a distinctly different one on a timescale that is faster than the responsible forcing. But then there is a societal or ecological definition, and that is a climatic change that takes place so rapidly and unexpectedly that human and the natural systems have difficulty adapting to it. I want to talk about glaciers. Among the first responders to global warming, they serve both as indicators and drivers of climate change. Evidence for abrupt climate change, past and present. Evidence for a recent acceleration in the rate of ice loss in the tropics. A clear and present danger. I've spent over 30 years looking at the record in ice, and we have tremendous records now coming from the polar regions, the very deep cores from East Antarctica, and we have now a number of high-resolution records coming from the high mountain regions around the world, and I'll be talking mainly about those. The ice core work is really interdisciplinary, and it records not only climate, things like temperature and net balance accumulation through time, but it also records a lot of the forcings of climate, changes in volcanic activity, the greenhouse gases trapped in the air bubbles. It's a wonderful archive of our past. If we look at the changes in our atmosphere, Charles Keeling's curve, we're currently about 382 parts per million by volume, CO2 rising 1.5 to 2 parts per million by volume each year. And the ice cores have allowed us to put that curve into a perspective. And the ice and the bubbles in the ice has archived that history. If you look at the changes since 1750, back before industrialization, you can see what the natural levels were, about 280 parts per million by volume, and we're now over 100 parts per million by volume higher than that. We know the sources. If you look at the increase in CO2, 80% of it's coming from the burning of gas, oil, and coal, another 20% coming from biomass burning. So if we look at where we are today with these greenhouse gases, and then we look at where we're projected to be in less than 100 years with our business as usual models. And of course, CO2 remains in the atmosphere 70 to 120 years once it's released. So the question is, what will that do to the climate of our planet? And IPCC can take those same models and project what those changes might be, and that range, the most recent assessment is somewhere between 2 and 4.5 degrees C, with a mean of about 3 degrees C warming. And is that significant? And it certainly is when you look at the temperature of the Earth, and the temperature changes as you go through one of these glacial cycles. To go from a time when we have ice cover, and Columbus, Ohio is under a mile thick ice sheet, we're talking about a 6 degree C temperature change. And what we're looking at is in less than 100 years, a temperature rise of, on the average, of 3 degrees. So it is significant. And then you ask, well, how far back in the geologic record do you have to go to find when temperatures were 2 to 3 degrees warmer? And you have to go back to the Pliocene, almost 3 million years ago. And then if you ask what was sea level 3 million years ago, you're talking 25 to 35 meters higher than today. These are very significant changes. The ice cores provide a unique history from regions where other recording systems are missing, records from Antarctica and Greenland, but also from the very highest mountain regions of the world. Over the last 30 years, we've been working to put together kind of a global picture of climate as recorded in ice. And we have many, many wonderful paleoclimate recorders, and they all add to our history in developing that history. I'm going to take you to one of these sites just to give you an idea of how these records are produced. In 2003, we drilled Quelccaya Ice Cap down in the Andes of Peru and also Coropuna in southern Peru. Quelccaya ice cap is the largest tropical ice cap on Earth. The elevation here, the summit, is 18,650 meters. It's the one that has these very distinct annual layers, and it has a very distinct history preserved in it. We've spent a lot of time in engineering, developing lightweight, portable systems that can run on solar power, multiple energy sources, to recover these cores from remote parts of the world. Those are brought back frozen to the labs at Ohio State, and their history is developed. And just to give you an idea of how that history is preserved, just look at two parameters here, the stable isotopes of oxygen and dust. Every year in the tropics, where you have a wet and dry season, you have a dust layer. And if you look at these, you'll see that time is getting compressed as you go back in time. Here we are 1520 to 1560. The Spanish arrived in this part of the world in 1531, and that's where we have the first written records from that part of the world. You can go back to 1240 to 1330, back to 660 to 800, in a part of the world where we have hardly any information of how the system has worked. Put it together, you get a history, an annual history, going back 315 AD. And if you look at this, you can see events that we know of in the northern hemisphere, the medieval warm period, the Little Ice Age, where you have more depleted isotopes. You can see major volcanic eruptions, like the eruption of Huayna-Pitina in February 17th to March 3rd, 1600. It's in the church records, and it gives us a time check on our chronologies. So they're wonderful records. Now, you can put these together and come up with a composite for the tropics. If you look at the three cores from the Andes, they go back and you look at the decadal averages over the last 2,000 years, you can again see in these cores the medieval warm period and the Little Ice Age and enrichment in the 20th century. If you combine those, you kind of capture the tropics, and the tropics cover 50% of the surface of our planet. And then you can compare that with other paleoclimate reconstructions from the northern hemisphere, and you see a lot of similarities in these curves back through time. But what really stands out is the last 80 years in the record, and that's the isotope history. But glaciers record climate in other ways, and one of the ways is what's actually happening to the ice. So I want to take you very quickly around the world to show some changes that have occurred in recent time. If you look at the 700 glaciers in southeast Alaska that have been named, of those, 98% of them are retreating. There's about a dozen that are actually advancing. And you see similar stories if you go to the Himalayas. Yao Tang Dong and the Institute of Tibetan Plateau Research, they're studying 612 glaciers in Tibet. Of those, from 1990 to 2005, some 95% of them were retreating. You can go to the Alps, you can see the change that's taking place in that part of the world. Over 98% of the glaciers being monitored in the Alps are losing their mass, the same story. In Kilimanjaro, the oldest photos there were taken back in 1912, and those are actually glaciers. You have to be careful when you look at mountains to make sure you're looking at ice and not a snow cover. But those are glaciers in 1912. 1970, a photo from Bruno Meserle, and then by 2000, when we went there to drill. And the people who lived here have watched the ice retreat up this mountain. These glaciers are dying. They're remnants of another climate on our planet. If you go over to Tibet, and this is a very important part of the world. Many of the major rivers have their source up on the Tibetan Plateau and in the Himalayas. The Himalayan glaciers store about 12,000 cubic kilometers of fresh water in about 15,000 glaciers and are the lifeline for millions of people. And our most recent site was over here, Nanu Nami. It's about a five-day journey west of Lhasa. It's at the source of the Indus River, the Ganges River, and the Brahmaputra River. And in 2006, we drilled three cores to bedrock. Now, one of the first things we do when we get the cores back is that we look at all the thermonuclear bomb tests that human beings have done. And all the glaciers that we have drilled to date, Adunda, Galia, Dasupu, and Puragangri, you can see the 62-63 Soviet test in the beta radioactivity. We determine that, we can determine accumulation rate. When we looked at the cores from Nanu Nami, it's not there. Then the next thing we do is we look for the IV test, the 5152 US test. We look at chlorine 36, working with our colleagues Jürg Beer at the ETH facility in Switzerland. And you can see this on ice cores, previous ice cores drilled around the world. But in Nanunami, it's not there. That tells us at the top of this glacier, there has been no accumulation or a net loss since at least 1950. And if you look at Kilimanjaro, when we drilled in 2000, this layer was 1.8 meters below the surface. Had we waited until 2006, it wouldn't have been there either. So these glaciers are wasting from the surface down, and they're at the source, in many cases, of major water supplies for people. If you go down to the Andes of South America, the longest documented glacier now is Quillacaya. And if you look at what's happening in that part of the world, you can see that it's not just retreating. There's an exponential increase. In the first 15 years of measurement, the terminus is retreating at about 6 meters per year. In the last 15 years, it's been over 60 meters per year, a tenfold increase. So glaciers, especially tropical glaciers, are the canaries in the coal mine for our global climate system as they integrate and respond to most of the key climatological variables, such as temperature, precipitation, cloudiness, humidity, and radiation. Global glacier retreat at the beginning of the 21st century is driven mainly by increasing temperatures, although regional factors such as deforestation can play a role in any given site. Now, the problem is when you look at this, and if you're a skeptic on climate change, you'll say, well, you know, glaciers have changed through time, so how do you know this is unusual? Well, occasionally you can find older photographs, and you can overlap those photos, and you can see where glaciers have disappeared. You can see it's not only area, but thickness of glaciers that are being lost. But this is still a relatively short period of time. So can you do better? This is a quote from Sir Ernest Shackleton in 1915. What the ice gets, the ice keeps. And he was talking about his ship, the Endurance, that led to this epic journey out of Antarctica. But it's true for ice itself. Anything that is buried in the ice is preserved. And as the glaciers retreat, these things are coming out. And I'm only going to give a couple examples of this. On the Quillacaya ice cap, as this glacier retreats, this is recently exposed land. This is a lake that didn't exist back in 1977. And in 2002, on the backside of this lake, we found a plant deposit. And this is a wetland plant deposit, perfectly preserved. It came out of the retreating margin of the ice cap. And the amazing thing is how fast this ice can disappear. And other plants have come out. We now have collected over 50 specimens. And these can be carbon dated. Distichia muscoides is the plant. And you can see the age is 5,200 years. So that's tell us that this ice cap hasn't been smaller for at least 5,200 years. Otherwise, this plant would have decayed. And if you look around the world, there are other things coming out of the ice. You've probably heard of Ötzi, the Iceman. Came out of the Austrian Alps in 1991. Interesting thing about this man is he's the same age as the plants down in the Andes in Peru. I want to come back to the modern world and look at two areas where the Earth is warming most rapidly, and that's in the high latitudes. And if you look at the Antarctic Peninsula, the temperatures there have risen about 2 degrees C over the last 50 years. If you look at Antarctica as a whole, altimeter data indicate that East Antarctica is thickening with increased snowfall and surface cooling. It's work by Jay Zawali. Locally, on Platt Island and Thwaites Glacier in West Antarctica, there's a thinning taking place, which is 0.75 to 2.5 meters per year, and that's accelerating. And the GRACE satellite data from 2002 to 2005, if you take Antarctica as a whole, it's losing mass and contributing to sea level rise. If you go to the north, to Greenland, very dramatic changes taking place there. Formation of these meltwater lakes and the expansion of the melt zones on this ice cap. Water moving through moulins, lubricating the base of the glacier, and a noted, measured increase in the rate at which the ice is flowing into the ocean. And one example of one of these large outlet glaciers is the Jakobshavn ice stream, which drains about 6.5% of the Greenland ice sheet. And this shows the position of the terminus back in 1850 coming forward. And you can see it was stable from 1953 to 2000, but just recently has started to accelerate. And if you look at the rate of change, between 2000 and 2003, the speed doubled. And there has been a thinning of 120 meters on surface from 1997 to 2003. So very large change. The other thing is that we see this happening with a lot of the outlet glaciers shown here. And the question is, when will you start seeing it to some of the outlet glaciers further to the north? Yesterday, Mark Serez gave a great lecture talking about sea ice. And again, this is something that's been in the news a lot this year. And if you look at that, the satellite data from 1979 coming forward to 2006, the change this year it has been tremendous. And all the modelers and the people I've talked to did not expect to see such rapid change. It's like it's fallen off a cliff. And there's talk of tipping points. Are there tipping points in the climate system? And would you know if you crossed the tipping point, or when would you know? And probably you would only know it when you see it in the rear view mirror. So if you look at the world as a whole, the 20th and 21st century, we're losing ice. All these red areas show a loss of ice. And so climatologically, we are in unfamiliar territory, and the world's ice cover is responding dramatically to these changes. And of course, the concern has to do with sea level rise and how that might change. Sea level is rising currently in around 3.1 plus or minus 0.7 millimeters per year. And we know this is due to, in part, thermal expansion of the oceans as oceans warm. Alpine glacier mass loss, and if you would lose all the alpine glaciers and plus look at thermal expansion, you'd be looking at a sea level rise of about 0.5 meters. We're losing mass, is our best measurements that we can tell from both of the major ice sheets, and we're pumping more groundwater for irrigation than is going back into those systems. So sometimes it's best to look at, you know, what's the worst case scenario? You say, how much could sea level rise? If you lost all the ice in East Antarctica, you could get 55 to 60 meters. If you lose West Antarctica, you get an additional 5 to 6 meters. And if you looked at Greenland, you could get 6 to 7 meters if you lose that ice sheet on top of that. So there's a lot of water stored on land in today's world. These are potentially huge changes that we face in a fairly short period of time. So I want to talk a little bit about society and our response to these changes and what our options are. And this is what I think our options are. We can talk about prevention, which means measures to reduce the pace and the magnitude of climate change in a global climate being caused by human activities. And examples of this would be prevention, including reducing greenhouse gas emissions, enhancing the sinks for these gases. We could talk about geoengineering to counteract the warming effects of greenhouse gases. You know, these are kind of our options. Adaptation, which means taking measures to reduce the adverse impacts on human well-being that result from climate changes that do occur. Examples of this would be adaptation with changing agricultural practices, strengthening defenses against diseases, climate-related diseases, and building more dams and dikes, but this is a moving target, and we don't know exactly how the different regions are going to be impacted. And the last is suffering. That is the adverse impacts that are not avoided by either mitigation or adaptation. And the history of man would say that, you know, who pays the price for change? Well, it's usually those who are least able to adapt, and in this particular case, who are least responsible. This is a Quechua Indian girl that lives just below the Calcaya ice cap down in the Andes in Peru. So if I was to go over the key points from this presentation, they would be that the 20th century is the warmest in the last 2,000 years as recorded in low-latitude ice cores, and in several places, the warmest in over 5,000 years. Ice cores provide a unique information that extends our knowledge of the Earth's climate history. Climatologically, we're in unfamiliar territory, and the world's ice cover is responding dramatically to that. The observed rapid changes that we're currently seeing in Greenland and Antarctica are not predicted by our climate models. They call for slow linear response. And what we're seeing is fast glacier flow, and we haven't included that. Glaciers in most parts of the world are rapidly melting, and their loss will affect 2 to 3 billion people, and a valuable paleoclimate archive will be lost forever. Glaciers are our most visible evidence of global warming. They integrate many of the climate variables in the Earth system. Their loss is readily apparent, and they have no political agenda. So it brings us to our Earth, and if we've learned anything from our space program, is how unique the planet is for the life as we know it. And I like to think about, you know, what it is that we as human beings might do, and when might we do it. But you can ask the question for this issue. Given that greenhouse gases last average residence time 70 to 120 years, if we behave the way that we have in the past and we wait for that crisis, we've already built in a whole series of crises. And then you have to ask what it would take, what that crisis would be. Certainly wasn't the heat wave that hit Europe in 2003 that killed over 30,000 people. It could be something like back-to-back Category 5 hurricanes hitting the same place if it was a major city. You know, what would it take to get the attention to put us all on the same page on this issue? But what is very clear here is that for the issue of global warming, nature is the timekeeper, and none of us can see the clock. So thank you very much. It's my pleasure to have an opportunity to speak to you tonight. Thank you.
That was Dr. Lonnie Thompson. He teaches in the Department of Geological Sciences and is senior research scientist at the Byrd Polar Center at Ohio State University. Most of his work of the last several decades has focused on tropical glaciers and the climate information that they contain. He and his wife were recipients of a 2007 Distinguished Explorer Award. Even though he was awarded the prestigious 2007 National Medal of Science, no other broadcast or TV media attended the talk that you just heard. Visit TUC Radio's website at www.tucradio.org for more information. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations. Your order of a CD or film on DVD or your donation is our only support and is essential in keeping TUC Radio on the air. You can find a free download of the 29-minute version of this talk by Dr. Lonnie Thompson on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. For an extended 40-minute CD or film on DVD, place your order on the website or call 1-707-463-2654. My name is Maria Gelöden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.